This is the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Now, here's Andy Burcham with another Talking Tigers podcast.
In May of 2012, Josh Wetzel, while serving in the U.S. Army, stepped on an IED in Afghanistan. He lost both of his legs that day. His wife, Paige, was living in the state of Washington. 5 days later, Josh and Paige began a 2-year road to recovery at Walter Reed Army Medical Center in Bethesda, Maryland. They had met at Gadsden State while he was playing baseball and she was playing volleyball. Paige went on to play at Jacksonville State. Josh eventually flunked out of school and enrolled in what he thought would be a 20-year career in the Army. Kate Larkin with the Auburn University Alumni Association and her daughter Anna reached out to Josh and Paige at Walter Reed. And now the Wetzels live in Auburn, and Josh works for Auburn Athletics with a college degree in hand. Paige is a full-time homeschool mom to their two daughters. The story of Josh and Paige Wetzel, the book that they're writing, and how they became a part of the Auburn family is featured in this Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. And welcome into another edition of the Talking Tigers podcast presented by Wickles Pickles. Very glad to have with us today Paige and Josh Wetzel. Josh and I sat down to do the very first Talking Tigers podcast in August of 2018, talking about his time in the Army, the explosion that took both of Josh's legs, and his life since. Josh, of course, works with Auburn Athletics. Paige has worked in volleyball with Auburn Athletics as well, and they're about to release a brand new book called Beautifully Broken: An Unlikely Journey of Faith. And we're glad to have both of you with us today on this Talking Tigers podcast. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having us.
Paige, if you would, this is the first time you and I have been able to talk on one of these Talking Tigers podcasts. I think I have an idea of the inspiration for the book, but just talk, if you would, about the timing of it to finally sit down and to write the story for you and Josh, if you would.
I have tried to write this story for probably 5 years, honestly. I've always been a record keeper. Even back when I was a little kid, I used to always journal everything. And when Josh was injured, I wanted to make sure that I journaled things, even if it was just for the purpose of remembering what happened on what day, just to better advocate for his care. And then I really just kind of got, I guess, inspired to kind of organize it and put it together, mostly for our girls, because both of our children were born after Josh was an amputee. And I was just afraid that by the time we could sit them down and actually tell them what happened, that I would have forgotten most of it. And so as I'm trying to piece things together and just get things organized for their learning, I also just made sure to write down the things that I learned while I was going through all of those things, whether that was really learning how to lean into my faith or learning how to better communicate with Josh or the things I learned about marriage, because I certainly want to pass those things along to my children too. And as I was writing that down, I just kind of had this feeling like everyone should hear this story. This could help a lot of people, not just help my children understand what happened to their dad. And in that process, I, along with our publishers, really thought Josh's voice was important too. So we kind of went back through what I had written and added his voice into that and his point of view. So you get the veteran side of things, but also the caregiver side of things, which is what I think makes it unique, because not many people hear the side of the story from the person taking care of the veteran.
Josh, in your podcast that we did a couple years ago, you talked about you and your mother, I think, were Auburn fans growing up in an Alabama family. And Paige, listening to a podcast that you did on UTC Network, the Auburn Roots podcast with Kyle Loomis, you grew up an Alabama fan, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Where did you guys meet?
We met at Gadsden State in 2006, the end of 2005, 2006. I was playing baseball there at the time, and Paige was playing volleyball. You know, I came from a small high school where volleyball was just there to keep the basketball players in shape. So they weren't real good, so I never really went to their games. And I was pretty amazed by, like, good volleyball. you know, when you add that in with, you know, Paige here, I was very attracted to the sport, and you know, I was one of their biggest fans. So yeah, we met at Gadsden State in 2006.
Paige, he was attracted to the sport. That's how he put that.
Oh yeah. I heard that. I heard that.
When did volleyball become a big part of your life?
I had just kind of played around with sports. I'd never really played an organized sport like in elementary school or anything. I always went to camps, and I don't know, my sister and I, we just grew up outside, you know, we just played outside all the time. And so when I first got into middle school, sixth graders could try out for the seventh grade team. And so my mom played, and she kind of just showed me some different things and just enough to get me ready for tryouts. And I want to say it was like a week long tryout, and I really just had no idea what I was doing. And, you know, you're just kind of, I feel like you spend more time chasing the ball around than actually playing volleyball, but it was just so much fun. From that point, I mean, I was always either on my school team or on a travel team or doing lessons or a camp. I played softball and basketball a little bit outside of that, but volleyball was just always that sport that I just couldn't wait to get back to it. I played in several different formats, you know, obviously played on a collegiate team, but after I got done playing and, you know, we moved to Washington State, I played in sand tournaments, grass tournaments. And so it's still just one of my favorite things to do. And it's a very high speed sport. It's a very dynamic sport for women, especially. So I appreciate it from both the playing side and the coaching standpoint too.
From Gadsden State then, Paige, you go on to play at Jacksonville State, correct?
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. Who was your coach at Jacksonville State?
Rick Nold.
Okay.
He's my coach.
When you're done playing volleyball, then you go into the coaching side of things, right?
Correct. Immediately after I got done playing at Jacksonville State, I was the graduate assistant at JSU for a year. That was kind of a weird year for Josh and I because I graduated from college. We got engaged. At this time, Josh was at Fort Bragg in North Carolina, and we weren't really sure what was next in his Army career. So I stuck around at JSU, worked on my master's degree, and I was the graduate assistant coach there. And then that following semester, we got married over Christmas break because that's what you do when you're in the military. That following semester, I finished up one more semester of graduate school, and then Josh and I moved to Washington State, which is where I started coaching junior volleyball. So I coached a club team out there. And then actually when Josh got injured, we were at Walter Reed Hospital in DC for 2 years. So I actually got to coach a junior team in Washington, DC as well. And then when we moved from DC to Auburn, I had two head coaching stints in college before I became the director of ops for Auburn. I was the head coach at Point University and Auburn University at Montgomery.
Josh was listening to Paige's podcast yesterday, and at one point she talked about the plan for your career once you entered the Army was you were going to be a career Army guy. It was going to be 20 years in the Army and then move on from that. How long had it been that you were in before the injury took place?
I enlisted in January of 2010, and I was only in for 2 years when I got injured. So I got injured on May the 31st of 2012, not very long into that stint.
As mentioned before, Josh and I did a podcast almost 2 years ago now, and he went into great detail about the accident that day. So right now I'm going to play an excerpt from that Talking Tigers podcast where he talks about the accident, and then we'll pick it up after that.
So that day I was leading our patrol. We were walking, and everywhere we went, we kind of had to walk in a straight line, kind of ducks in a row,
right?
Is how we describe it, which is in the military, that's, you know, tactically not what you want to do at all. You want to stay pretty, you know, spread out on a line. But we had to have the protection of the metal detector everywhere we went. So we had to change that tactic as well. And so we're just walking in a line with a wall on our left, and I came up to a road, and the wall ended at the road. And so I kind of took like an indirect route to kind of see around the wall to make sure everything was good. And as I did, I saw two lines of rocks on the road. And usually that's a sign from enemy fighters that there is an IED in the area. They're warning the locals to kind of stay away. And my thought that was that it was on the road. And so, you know, I called back to my platoon sergeant and I was like, listen, I'm going to be a little more careful going along the road. I'm just going to clear a pretty big spot and we're going to mark it. We marked it with like spray paint. You know, I cleared the road, took a good little bit to clear the road. And then, you know, once we cleared the road, there was a little field and then there was a wall. And so we had to go over the wall. And of course, since they had stopped putting IEDs in the low spots, I went to the low spot and kind of took my time. I cleared in front of the wall. And then as I went to reach over the wall to clear the other side was when I actually stepped on the IED. Turns out that that particular IED didn't have any metal content in it at all. So my metal detector couldn't pick it up. And that was actually the first time we had had one of those in our area. So it was kind of unlucky, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's kind of how it happened.
What's the next thing you remember?
I remember the entire thing. I stepped on it. I can remember flying through the air. You know, I joke around with people all the time. You know, I can remember seeing, you know, sky, the dirt, the sky, the dirt, and then I hit the ground. And as soon as I hit the ground, I had a pretty good idea that I had lost at least one or both of my legs. I couldn't feel it at the time because I was still in shock.
Right.
And so I just started, you know, undoing my chest protector and making sure, kind of giving myself the once over. And you know, I looked at my right arm and I had had some, you know, injuries to my right forearm and they didn't seem too bad at the moment. And then I looked at my left arm and noticed, you know, my middle finger on my left hand was partially amputated. So decided that at that moment I didn't want to look at that anymore. So yeah. I start checking everything else out and I never looked at my legs or anything. And, you know, I can just remember laying there. And my medic was actually my best friend. You know, we slept in tents over there. And so, like, his bed was right next to my bed. And, you know, most of the time when I wasn't leading the patrol, I would be in the back with him all the time. And so we got to know each other pretty well. And I knew that naturally he's a pretty shaky person. It was his, you know, first deployment. And so I knew that, you know, him coming to work on his best friend, like he wasn't going to be in a good spot. And so at that point I decided like, all right, I'm making it through this and I've got to be cool. So he'll be all right. You know, as soon as he got to me, you know, the first thing I asked him, I was like, hey, did you see that sick flip that I did? Like I landed that. And, you know, he obviously didn't want to hear that, but he was just telling me to shut up the entire time. And I was like, no, seriously, like I landed it, like it happened. And, you know, once I realized that, you know, he would, you know, kind of took the pressure off of him or whatever, I asked him, I was like, you know, I think I already know the answer to this, but are my legs there? And he was like, nah, they're gone. They're both gone. And I was like, all right, we're going to make it through this. Like the guy from, you know, South Africa, Oscar Pistorius, you know, is just getting ready for the Olympics or whatever. And so, you know, seeing him run, that moment flashed into my mind and I was like, you know, I'm going to get those legs. I'm going to be able to run when you guys get back. We're going to have family barbecues. Like we're good. We're going to make it through this.
All right, Paige, we hear Josh's side of this story. When did you first learn of the accident and how did that take place?
Oh, that was a crazy day. I was living in Washington State at the time and I was getting ready for work. I used to work in this before and after school program. So I used to have to get to work pretty early. And it was about 6 a.m. and I was actually getting ready to leave the house and this strange phone number called me. There was no like location on the caller ID or anything. So I wasn't sure what it was, and I literally had the thought of, if this is something important, they'll leave a voicemail. And so I just, you know, went ahead and kept getting ready. And then all of a sudden I had a voicemail. And I mean, I just knew it just was that like really sick, like I'm going to be sick feeling. And so it was someone from the Department of the Army asking me to call them back at my earliest convenience regarding my husband. And so I called him back immediately. And you have to go through certain protocol of identifying yourself and making sure you're talking about the right person. So I gave Josh's social security number and all that stuff, just really hoping that by identifying him, I would have somehow they would have made a mistake, you know, and said, sorry, we called the wrong person. And I think the guy on the phone kind of, he felt that and he kind of really like stiffened up with me and was like, I need you to pay attention. And I have a list of injuries that I need to list for you. I couldn't really process full sentences, but I certainly remember them saying that Josh had a C4 break in his neck, like upper vertebrae, and both arms were broken and both legs were gone, and he had a traumatic brain injury. And they had also told us that he was unconscious from the blast. By the time I'd heard all of that, I mean, I'm just sitting on the floor in my bathroom, and my only question after that was, well, are you going to tell his parents or do I have to? And they said, no, we're going to call them next. And so when I received that news, it was just I could have never anticipated what ended up happening. You know, I didn't know that day that I was going to have to quit my job and never return to, you know, our home, our first home in Washington State. I didn't know that I needed to like pack up my entire apartment. I threw a couple of things in a bag and had some friends take me to the airport, and I flew back home to Alabama just to be around my family. But that was a mind-numbing experience to the point where I just really felt like I couldn't function. I needed my good friends that were there for me. They did all the thinking for me. They booked the flights for me. They did all of those things because I could hardly think about what I was supposed to do in the next 5 minutes. That was one of those days where it doesn't matter how many books you read or movies you watch or whatever, it has its way of just kind of shutting your brain off and your ability to take action, you know. So it was very important that I had good friends around me that kind of took care of me until we figured it out.
Josh, you mentioned that your mother then came, I guess, to Germany. Is that right? Because Paige didn't have a passport at this time. So the first time you two saw each other after the injury was it at Walter Reed?
Yeah, it was at Walter Reed.
All right. I'm going to ask both of you your perspective of that first, what you remember of that first meeting after the injury at Walter Reed.
It took Josh 5 days to get back to the States, which was like the worst 5 days of my life. And we finally figured out that he was going to stop through Walter Reed. And while he was stopping through, his family and I were going to lobby for him to just stay there because that was the closest amputee hospital to the rest of our family. So I went ahead and flew myself to Walter Reed. I wasn't going to wait on the Army to tell me where to go and that kind of thing. So I just went ahead and flew myself up there. And I was actually staying in a hotel about a mile away from the hospital campus, and Josh and his mother were on the ambulance that took soldiers from Andrews Air Force Base to Walter Reed Hospital. And of course, they don't know quite where they are or how far they are from Walter Reed or anything like that. So his mom actually told me, you know, we're pulling into Walter Reed. So about that time, I asked someone to give me a ride to the hospital, and we were met by this liaison. Is a wounded families get assigned a military liaison, and they're just supposed to help you out with various things, whether it be healthcare stuff or Army stuff or whatever. I just remember this guy kind of meeting us in the emergency room parking lot, and he kept trying to warn me about what I was going to see. And I was like, I'm going to punch you in the face if you don't show me where my husband is. And so anyway, I was like, look, we can talk about all this later. You know, I need to figure out where Josh is. And And in my mind, I thought, Josh is expecting me, so I'm not trying to sit here and not be here, you know, and with him wondering where I am. So I wandered through the ICU, and by the time that I got to the ICU, which I had never even been on Walter Reed's campus before, so I don't really know where I'm going. But when I got to the ICU floor, this guy is like practically chasing me down the hallway, and I have decided I'm leaving him behind. And I finally see Josh's room, and it's, you know, got his name tape on the outside of the room or whatever. I had to put like a gown and gloves on and all that stuff. And then when I went in the room, I think just after all the information that I had received 5 days before, thinking that he was unconscious and maybe his neck was broken and all these things that just could have really just taken his spirit away, I just wanted to see his face, and I didn't care about missing legs or anything like that. So when I came in the room, I mean, I was just like, that was the happiest I had been in a long time. And I just remember seeing Josh, and he just kind of was emotional and started crying and started apologizing, because, you know, that's how military guys are. You know, he was sorry that he got hurt. And he said, I'm just so sorry. And I said, for what? Coming home early? And he goes, no, I told you I wasn't going to get hurt. And I went over there and I lost my legs. And I said, well, you didn't lose them. We're just not going to go back and get them. And so from that point, it was just kind of like, look, we got to be thankful for where we are. And if we keep just gratitude in our hearts that, you know, you are still here, then that's how we're just going to be able to deal with everything. So it was just after all that I've been through the 5 days before, I didn't care about anything else. I just worried about whether like the Josh that I knew was still in there, like mentally and emotionally and spiritually. And when I learned that I still had that, then that's all that really mattered to me.
Josh, how about your perspective of that first meeting?
When Paige came in and, you know, like she said, I was pretty emotional, you know, and, you know, one of the things, you know, when I left is, you know, like every dumb military person, like I promised her that I wasn't going to get hurt, you know, and kind of like a, you know, bad start to the deployment there, but I didn't want her to be upset because I broke that promise, you know, and so that's why I was apologizing, whatever. But, you know, when she said, you know, and I tell the story all the time, when she said, like, we know where your legs are, we're just not going to go back and get them, you know, that just kind of set the tone for my whole recovery right there. Because at that moment, there was no more looking back or anything like that. It was all looking forward towards getting better, you know, and having a purpose.
It's a 2-year process that starts at that moment of seeing each other at that point. What was the hardest part of that? And Josh, I'll start with you. Give us an idea. What was the hardest part of that 2-year time frame that you were at Walter Reed?
Honestly, there's quite a bit that was pretty hard. But yeah, you know, I'd say one of the hardest things, you know, we had our Facebook page or whatever, you know, our Prayers for Josh Wetzel page. And you know, that was mainly for, you know, it started out for updates for my family or whatever. And then it exploded from there. And, you know, my main thing was trying to, you know, like keep a positive face for, you know, my soldiers that were still in Afghanistan. And honestly, like that was one of the hardest things to do because, you know, on the outside through Facebook, you know, all you saw was like, you know, triumph stories, you know, like my first time brushing my teeth, my first time walking, my first time getting out of my room, you know, when behind the scenes, there was so much more going on, from, you know, hallucinations from the medications that I was on and dreams and, you know, just weak moments overall. You know, there was just a lot going on behind the scenes that nobody saw. And it was hard to, you know, really keep that positive face, you know, through Facebook. And, you know, thank goodness I had Paige and my mother there, you know, to kind of, you know, they were there to kind of capture all those moments. And, you know, while those moments were few, you know, they captured just about every one of them.
Paige, how about you?
It was hard for me to watch Josh suffer behind the scenes as well, just because his deployment was still very much going on. And there was a brief kind of window of time where we kind of thought, you know, okay, Josh has got these terrible injuries, but nobody better than Josh to handle this. You know, he's positive and he's going to stay positive for his friends and that kind of thing. And we're, it was like our mission was, we're going to do everything we can to make sure that they're not worried about him, you know, and even at the end of a bad day for them, they could look on social media and see Josh is doing well, and maybe that will, you know, raise their spirits and things like that. But then the tough part was that that deployment continued to harm other people. And there was a big guilt factor that Josh was dealing with that I was so ill-equipped for. And not that I didn't understand, I understood where he was coming from of this, you know, bad things are happening to my team and I'm here unable to do anything about it. Can't even talk to him about it really, you know? And so he couldn't even really adequately check in on people and things like that. And so it was a strange thing because it kept him motivated. You know, he wasn't just going to lay in the bed and not get better, because he kept them in his mind. But at the same time, there was this huge guilt factor that Josh was dealing with. And I'm sitting here going, who am I to even give any kind of advice or, you know, try to help somebody through that? And it was with our relationships with other amputees that really brought that to the light, and it helped Josh have some conversations with other people that were feeling the same way, either because they were one of the first ones to get hurt in their unit or their deployment was still going on. But it was something that for the first time in our marriage, I really understood that, and this is just my personality, but I'm a helper, I'm a fixer. And I was just so, you know, like there's nothing I can do. And that was really hard because I was willing to do anything. You know, God just put some really good people in front of Josh. And while the soldier was helping him, that soldier's wife was helping me. And so we really just had to kind of open up the conversation a little bit, but it makes a huge difference when you're talking to somebody that feels the same way. But before that happened, I mean, I was just like, we're going to a dark place if we don't try to find some kind of outlet to adequately express what Josh is going through right now.
Josh, have you been able to reconnect with those folks that were in your unit?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I stay in touch with a lot of them pretty regularly. You know, I tell people all the time that, you know, when you go through something like that, you know, there's a bond that forms naturally, right? And our unit did a great job of, before we were deploying, they put us in some really tough situations so we could grow together as a team. And I'm really thankful for that, because that's a bond that, you know, I'll never have with anybody else. I have a little brother and I love him to death, but, you know, my relationship with him will probably never be what my relationship with those guys that I deployed with, because, you know, we bled, sweat, and cried together, you know, and we went through life experiences together. And so that's a bond that, you know, I'll probably never have with anybody else. So yeah, we stayed in touch pretty regularly. We look at, you know, my platoon sergeant, he also got injured. He's a triple amputee. I mean, he lives in Texas, and everybody kind of looks at him like he's our dad. You know, we our, you know, platoon mascot was the Earth Pigs, and, you know, we call him Pig Daddy sometimes, you know. That's what we used to call him on the radio when we were in Afghanistan. And so, you know, we look at him like a father figure, and, you know, we're just kind of all brothers that share a common experience.
Thank you for being as honest and as open as both of you are. As tough as things got, physically, emotionally, how did you make it out of that then? I mean, what was the key to taking those steps forward?
Honestly, I would say, one, our faith. You know, we, in that moment, you know, we really clung to our faith and, you know, our belief that God had a purpose, you know, for this. So that was a really big driving factor. And then the thing that kept us going afterwards was, you know, our community with other people, you know, our community with the other amputees and the wives at Walter Reed. You know, during our recovery, that helped us out a lot, you know, being able, for me, being able to see other guys that have, are going through the same thing and, you know, that I'm not alone. And for Paige, you know, having, seeing wives that are going through the exact same things that she's going through was, you know, a big driving force for us. And then, you know, afterwards, once we got out of Walter Reed and moved to Auburn, you know, like the community here in Auburn, you know, getting behind us and really supporting us, you know, was a huge driving factor for us.
Wickles Pickles is proud to be the new sponsor of the Talking Tigers podcast. From Saturday sandwiches to Thanksgiving dinner, that secret 90-year-old recipe has people from all over calling to get some of those sweet and spicy jars. Look for Wickles Pickles at a grocery store near you and bring those tangy and fresh pickles to your home. Made fresh in Dadeville, Alabama. Paige, what was your first communication from Auburn, the Auburn family, Auburn University? Do you remember?
I do remember. It's kind of funny because when we were first at Walter Reed, Josh was on a surgery schedule every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. He would go to surgery, and in those early months, he was in surgery sometimes 8 hours a day. It was one of those moments where this kind of sounds bad because I think about, like, if someone that I loved was in surgery now, I wouldn't do this. But during his surgery times, those were literally the only times his mom and I got to rest. So we would get Josh into surgery, and then that was like the time to, you know, catch up on sleep, take showers, call people back home and deal with our affairs and that kind of thing. And so we were doing that. We were just trying to rest. And actually, Kate Larkin from the Auburn Alumni Association, her daughter, Anna, lived in D.C. at the time. Well, Anna, I guess, had a day off or something. And Josh had just gotten back from surgery, but he was resting and that kind of thing. And so I had gone, I think I had gone downstairs or something. And so Anna just kind of peeked her head in the door and she was like, "Hey, I'm Anna, you know, I'm from Auburn. My mom works at Auburn, and I just heard that you were an Auburn fan. I just want to check on you and let you know that, you know, we love you, we're praying for you," and whatever. Well, Josh was like out of it. I mean, he had no idea what was going on around him. And so when we met Anna a second time, you know, Josh was like, "I don't know her. I don't, you know." And she was like, "Yeah, I visited you before, you know." And so it was kind of funny. But Anna, for the most part, just kind of confirmed where Josh was and that, you know, she had actually like physically laid eyes on him. And through that, Kate Larkin and the rest of the university was able to reach out to us in meaningful ways as well. You know, at first it just kind of started with care packages and things like that. And then, you know, we were getting phone calls from, you know, people in the department just wishing us well, and then eventually made it to, you know, some athletics events and things like that. But it was funny because Josh, there was no like proof that he had ever met her because he was just so out of it from surgery. And then, I don't know, it was one of those things like, "I just talked to the nicest girl, Anna Larkin, and her mom works at the university, and you know, she says she met you." And Josh was like, "I remember that." So, you know, so we've, that she's not the only person we've had to meet a couple of times. So,
when was the decision made that when you guys were getting out of Walter Reed after that 2 years, that you would be coming to Auburn, starting your lives together again here in Auburn, Alabama?
Honestly, that's kind of a sequence of events, I guess. You know, we came during football season, came for the Texas A&M game, Johnny Manziel's freshman year. I don't know if you remember that. It didn't go well for us. But we came down like on a Friday or Thursday or something. Rick Nold, you know, took us around and essentially, you know, showed us around campus, treated me like I was a five-star athlete. I felt, you know, like the big dog on campus, and took me around and introduced me to all the coaches and Gene Chizik was here, got to meet him, Jay Jacobs, got to meet Pat Dye and just chat with them a little bit. Then they, you know, took me and like introduced me to the academic people. And, you know, I'll never forget sitting and talking to them and, you know, they were excited, you know, about the possibility of me coming to school there. And, you know, me and Paige just kind of like laughed a little bit because, you know, like school wasn't for me. it's still not for me. You know, the reason I joined the Army is because I flunked out of school. Matter of fact, you know, right before I joined the Army, I got put on academic probation at the University of North Alabama. So I didn't think that, you know, Auburn was going to be in the cards. And they were like, ah, that's not a big deal. You know, we'll, you know, we'll work around that and get you into school. And, you know, and then we were like, well, we're not sure how we're going to pay for it. And we're like, oh, they were like, oh, don't worry about that. You know, we already looked into that. And they started giving us a bunch of stuff on, you know, like through GI Bill and some other things. And, you know, once they started kind of rolling all that out of there, you know, it started seeming like a possibility, you know. And then I think the thing that kind of solidified it was just me getting accepted into Auburn as a student. And, you know, that was kind of the moment where me and Paige were like, all right, we don't know, you know, what God holds for us in the future, but we know that right now Auburn is where we're headed. And that was kind of the story there. And then, you know, once we got here, of course, you know, the community kind of rallied around us and loved on us. And we knew this was going to be our home for the rest of our lives.
A lot of things have happened since that time for you. I mean, Josh, you're a part of the athletic staff, have been for a number of years now. You're so much a part of the athletic staff. And I'll tell this story, Paige. I'm not sure you know this story.
Oh, yay.
That when Josh has made some basketball trips with us this past year, the challenge comes from 83-year-old Sonny Smith as to who would win a foot race. It's never taken place, and there's a lot of talking going back and forth. I think we all want to be there, that if that actually does take place, that it would that'd be a sight to behold.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
For you, Josh, I mean, to go from being in the Army, the injury, the recovery, back in school and graduating from Auburn University. And now this is your position. This is your, at least for now, this is what you're doing. Do you look back on any of this and go, I can't even imagine what my life has become at this point? And by the way, two children later, right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I look at it and it's just kind of surreal. You know, I grew up an Auburn fan. I loved Auburn. Never actually thought I would be able to, you know, attend Auburn and much less graduate from Auburn. And then, you know, work from Auburn, it just kind of blows my mind almost every day, you know, that I'm actually, you know, people, you know, ask me all the time and it's kind of a joke, you know, like, how am I doing? And, you know, I always respond with, I'm living the dream, you know, and I'm literally living the dream for me, you know. It's just kind of surreal. I never thought, you know, that God would place us here and have this for us. And it's funny that you asked that, you know, like every year on the anniversary of my injury, you know, I thank the person who did this to me, you know, because maybe I lost some legs along the way, but, you know, my life is better because of it. You know, I'm stronger in my faith. My marriage is stronger. Living the dream at Auburn University. I've got two beautiful little girls, one that I found out about on college football's largest scoreboard, and we literally have built our roots here. And I, you know, I just couldn't have imagined that this would have ever been possible.
Paige, for you, what's up with your life at this point now, Paige? Kind of give us an update if you would.
Writing this book and trying to just get it out into the world is a priority now. I never would have anticipated I would have been a full-time homeschool mom, but my child passed kindergarten this year. So that was an adventure. And I really thank God for just getting me ready for the weirdness that is 2020 and just being able to try to still be a leader in my home and try to steward my family and our, you know, our faith and that kind of thing through this very strange time. But I agree with Josh. It's like every day I just think about one of our favorite verses is Genesis 50:20, which is just, you know, you intended to harm me, but God meant it for good. And just how choosing to steward your struggles well, you just don't know what that's doing for other people. And I think one of the things that we have to, Josh and I have really, this quarantine has really brought to our attention is just, you know, how much are we truly living what we believe versus just trying to kind of get through the day. And that's been a struggle sometimes, but this has just been an opportunity for us to kind of make sure that we're, you know, we talked about like no skipped seasons. You don't just like in Josh's season where he was injured and we were really trying to just, there were days where it felt like we were just trying to get through the day. At the time, it just seems like it's not that big of a deal. It's not making that big of a difference. And sometimes you might even question why you're doing it, you know, like why I spend my energy like this when I don't feel good or don't feel like it, or maybe I just keep to myself and worry about myself, you know. And then you look back on it and you never regret making those choices. So, you know, just in this season that we're in now, we're trying to also do those things and just making sure that, you know, our veteran friends are okay. And we're, you know, truly trying to just reach out to people and help, I think just help people kind of stay on course, I guess. And other than that, we're just kind of, you know, greatly anticipating a fall and just like everybody else. And I know the world needs sports so badly. You know, it's amazing what athletics does to the world. And I know the world's hurting for that right now. So just kind of praying for that to happen and to bring people together through athletics.
Your message to other veteran families, and especially through this book, what would that be to those veterans and families of those veterans, Paige?
I think that there was just so much that I didn't understand about not only what Josh was currently going through, but it was also very hard to anticipate what we would go through a year later, 2 years later, you know, eight years later. And there are just things that you just can't predict the future sometimes. And like I said before, I'm a fixer and I'm a helper. And sometimes the downfall of having that kind of personality is that you think you know what's going to help somebody. So you can kind of intrude on people's process sometimes. And what I really hope that my side of the story shows is just the value of patience, but also the thing that I learned years after we got out of Walter Reed was just how important it was for Josh to know that nothing that he was going to tell me was ever going to put me in a position where I had to decide if like I still loved him or if I was going to judge him. And that's really half the battle. You know, everybody's got a different process as to how they heal from things. But when the person knows that even if what I have to say freaks you out a little bit, you're not sitting there contemplating whether you're going to walk away or not have a relationship with me. That's truly half the battle for most people. And I don't think I realized how I didn't do a good job of that in the past. And so it causes people to filter the truth instead of just bring the whole truth to the table. So I really hope that just patience as the person that loves somebody that's gone through trauma will be that message. But also I just hope that it makes the conversation easier for veterans. Maybe they never actually sit down and talk to their families or their friends about what happened to them, but just to be able to have something and say, you know, what this guy went through on his deployment, that stuff happened to me. And when people know that about you, it's amazing how their eyes are opened and how they can show up for you better and pray for you. And just having that understanding of someone without them having to sit down and verbalize it is something that I hope that we've made easier for someone else.
Josh, how about you?
Yeah, people all the time, you know, they're going through things and you know, when they come and talk to me about it, they're, you know, they always kind of compare, you know, what they're going through and what I've been through. For me, I don't look at it as like, I lost my legs. What I went through is much worse than what you're going through. Everybody's going through their own things, their own struggles in life. And everybody stepped on their, you know, metaphorical bomb sometime in their life. And so it's all about like how you bounce back from it and how you, you know, cling to your faith and, you know, use it, let God use that story, you know, for good.
The book is beautifully broken. When will it be published, and can folks pre-order the book right now?
Yes. So the goal is October of this year for it to be published. You can pre-order now. You can pre-order pretty much anywhere books are sold. You can go to Books A Million, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, any of those sites, and they'll have it. And you can also just go directly to our publisher's website, which is Hachette Book Group. That's H-A-C-H-E-T-T-E. And they have just kind of like a little profile just for our story and our book. So it kind of gives a little bit of a background on it as well.
Will this book be available in audio form?
Yes. Whether Josh and I read the audio, we're not sure about that. But yes, we have plans for that.
I think you should. I think you'd both be very good at it. Listen, thank you for spending time today and telling your story. That's what this podcast is about, of telling your story. I can't illustrate properly how inspiring your story, your lives are, not only to Auburn people, but across the board. I'm thrilled that you guys are part of the Auburn family and you're here. I wish you nothing but the best with this book coming out. And I wish you nothing but the best just in your future. So thank you both for being with us today on the Talking Tigers podcast and War Eagle.
War Eagle. Thank you, Andy.
War Eagle.
The book, Beautifully Broken, is set for release in October. You can pre-order your copy now at many of the online retailers. For Paige and Josh Wetzel and the Talking Tigers podcast, presented by Wickles Pickles, I'm Andy Burcham. Have a happy 4th of July weekend. Be safe and be well. War Eagle.